episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Joko. Matt and Jess joining me tonight. Guys, how are we?
Good.
Pretty good. How about you?
I am great. It didn't get that snowy today, so we are happy here in the Northeast.
Too soon.
All right, we got a packed episode, everything from more Fernando Alonso to some road to Indy news. So we'll jump right into it here, and I will turn it over to Matt to bring up our first news topic of this week.
Did you say Fernando Alonso?
I did.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we can just start with that. Breaking slash, it was just a good scoop in general, was Jim Aiello last week had come out and stated that he had sources, including Trevor Carlin, stating that on the record that Carlin and McLaren were in the process of working out a deal for the two sides to join forces for the Indianapolis 500. Carlin currently is expected to enter Chilton and Kimball, and then obviously McLaren with Fernando Alonso, forming some sort of alliance. Last time Alonso did the Indy 500 with McLaren, it was with Andretti Autosport as a kind of a technical alliance. So that one kind of came out of left field. Jess, any thoughts about this alleged alliance that's going to be announced within a month or so?
Yeah, like you said, a little bit out of left field, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, I think, you know, obviously they could have gone with somebody who had a little more experience under their belts, but I don't think it's going to be bad for them. I think it'll be good for the two teams to kind of learn together, honestly. Maybe a rough 500 this year, but in the long run, I think it would be a good fit.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. This is almost like a who of unexpectedness in terms of teams. This probably wasn't the best analogy, but you know, when I saw it come out, the first question that came to mind was, will this benefit McLaren more, or will it benefit Carlin more working with probably some, you know, pretty amazing people who McLaren has hired, like Jill DeFerrin and, you know, a couple other pretty big indie names. So I think it's a win-win right now. I'll leave it at that, and you know, we'll see where it goes. But I did see Trevor Carlin briefly Tuesday, and then when I saw the Carlin team on Wednesday, he was already flying somewhere for a meeting at 5 a.m. on Wednesday. So it's definitely possible he was going to deal with some McLaren stuff.
Yeah, two things to comment on that. First of all, good job, Jim Aiello. That was something that came out of left field. Second of all, I'm not trying to get too ahead of myself again, but with three episodes, we commented on who was going to make the biggest leap next year. And I said Carlin, and I'm pretty sure everybody laughed at me.
Yep.
Every week, it's building up to be that I'm looking more smart. And that's going to be up until the point we show up to St. Petersburg and they're like dead last after qualifying. But for now, I'm going to bask in my prediction and say that so far it's looking pretty good. It's not going to pan out, if I'm going to be honest. But for the moment, I'm just going to high-five myself and say that it's looking pretty good. We'll see if it helps Alonso, question mark, because obviously this time around I think he'll have a much tougher time than he did last time with the aero kit, with Andretti help. Now with the new kit, that's a lot tougher to drive according to drivers, and with Carlin, who's been to one Indianapolis 500, I think they may have an uphill battle, but we'll see. And speaking of Alonso, there's more news about Alonso that's not IndyCar related, and that is the head of Toyota's NASCAR division, or their North American division, came out last week and stated that they would love to get Alonso in a NASCAR, a Toyota NASCAR, for a road course race. I think, if memory serves me correct, there's three road course races now with Watkins Glen, Sonoma, and the Roval. Mike, we can play a little odds maker at 50-50. Do you think it's going to happen, or not going to happen?
No, I don't think it's going to happen.
Any reason why?
I feel like a couple months ago we were talking about potential Alonso and NASCAR, and somebody came out, whether it was Zach Brown or Alonso himself, and said, you know, I don't have any either interest in NASCAR or, you know, it's not going to happen in, on a race weekend. Now, maybe that'll change for, because it's a road course, but I don't see it happening in 2019.
Same. I will regretfully have to agree with you here, because I do believe that it was actually Alonso himself that said he was not really interested. Obviously, things can change, and obviously, as we all know, money does tend to talk. So I guess if he got some like outrageous deal, maybe he would go for it, but I just don't see it happening, at least not this year.
I think Alonso likes to mess with people on social media, so I'll say it's going to happen. I think he'll pull a 180 and just say, yeah, you know what? I was having a bad day that day I said that comment. He'll just come out and read. I'll take that. I just don't want to agree with you guys, basically, is what I'm trying to get at.
That's fair.
Jess, do you want to see it happen, though?
No. No. I don't think there is really anybody who has ever listened to our show or who knows me or who has found me on social media by accident or whatever, who would have any question in their mind that I am not a NASCAR fan. And so, no, I do not want to see this happen.
Well, hold up. If I go back to your tweets from 6 years ago, I bet I'll find one tweet saying that you're happy Danica's in NASCAR.
Probably not, but you know what? I probably did say something about I was glad that Kyle Larson was in NASCAR because I thought it was a good move for him. But as far as Danica, yeah, no. Well, actually, no. Yeah, I was glad that she went to NASCAR, but
Mike,
that's another story.
Yeah, I am going to disagree with Jess. I don't really want to see him in NASCAR. I'm just, you know, especially after watching the Daytona 500, I'm just kind of bored of it right now, and it'll make me tune in to watch the race, and then they'll get a little bit of an uptick in TV numbers, and I want IndyCar to have the uptick in TV numbers, so I'm going to play the selfish IndyCar fan card here and hope he does not go to NASCAR. I don't know about what you think, Matt.
I'm kind of in the same boat as Jess. don't really care for NASCAR, so I wouldn't, it's not like I would get up and watch. I would follow it on Twitter, but I don't think he would get as much out of it as he would doing like a 24-hour race or anything like that. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he would do amazingly well and just decide to, like, you know, well, I'm going to do this once a year maybe, but that's really optimistic, and who knows. But one person that Alonso shared the grid with last year was Marcus Ericsson on the Formula One grid. And Ericsson did get his first official test with an IndyCar. Sorry, this will be second with Coda. But he has done a couple outings at like Sebring, a couple other places like that. And he had an interview with IndyCar.com stating that, you know, after he's gotten a handful of tests with IndyCar now, he says that IndyCar is more of a driver's championship than Formula One. Mike, what do you think about that?
100% accurate. You know, like Ericsson said, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember his exact quote, that, you know, in F1, you're as good as the car. So if, you know, you're a pretty good driver and you're in an amazing car, you stand a chance at winning a race and contending for a championship. If you're Marcus Ericsson, who's what looks like a good driver, and you're in a garbage car, you're not going to do anything. So yeah, in IndyCar, it's a little bit more equal in terms of the car. They put it in the hands of the driver, and the driver goes out and wins the championships. Yeah, sure, the team has some say in setups and whatnot, but for the most part, if a driver can wheel the car, he's going to win a race and contend for a championship.
Oh, God, why do I have to agree with you again? Yeah, and obviously, right now, the way things stand, yes, I would say definitely IndyCar is going to showcase driver talent far more than F1 is. Obviously, in years past, that wasn't necessarily the case. And who knows going forward, when F1 decides that maybe they've had enough, they will change things again. But as of right this very minute, yes, I have to say that Indy is better.
Just so we can kind of break the streak here, Jess, who's your favorite baseball team?
The Rays.
Ooh. Mike, who's your favorite baseball team?
The Yankees.
Oh, look, you guys disagreed on something. All right.
Yeah.
moving on.
Like, we're big rivals there, actually.
Fantastic news today. Today, Wednesday. We're recording on Wednesday. Robert Wickens did post a video today not necessarily an update, but just a kind of a glimpse into something he's been working at, and that was standing up to hug his fiance Carly. Pretty sure there wasn't a single dry eye watching it at home. I was watching it at work, and there was definitely some dust in the air for me. I don't know about anybody else, but basically, yeah, he was standing up and giving Carly a hug. And I think today it was 6 months to the day since his accident. Just remarkable to see, and the continued progress. I don't know if you guys have anything you'd like to share about that.
Yeah, you know, I had goosebumps the entire 58 seconds of that video or so. Awesome to see. And he continues to exceed expectations at a record pace.
It's absolutely amazing to watch his progress. I think I've said it before, I'll say it again. He is an inspiration to a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, but it is truly eye-opening to watch him go through this process, and the attitude that he has about it is just fantastic.
So we're all just extremely grateful for, again, all these repeated updates that we get from Robert and his fiance. And, you know, again, we're not entitled to those, but we really appreciate those. So we'll keep following them along and keep looking for these updates from them. One thing to touch on before we get it over to Mike for Patreon shout outs is we got some international TV deals announced. I know in the past we've announced deals in Spain, Scandinavia, a couple other places. This week we went to Australia and New Zealand for some announcements. So New Zealand will have Sky Sports broadcasting their races. Obviously, I don't know a lot of, but I'm assuming there's plenty of Scott Dixon fans there. And then in Australia, surprisingly, maybe or maybe not, Fox has been selected for the IndyCar races, and Fox actually picked IndyCar over NASCAR, which kind of came as a surprise to a couple of people, including myself. So specifically focusing on that, Jess, any surprises there about Fox picking IndyCar over NASCAR, and any maybe parallels we can guess to what that might lead to in the future?
I wouldn't necessarily say that there are any surprises. I think that pretty much everybody, including NASCAR, knows that NASCAR is kind of in, call it a rut. They're in a little bit of trouble. And so I don't necessarily think that it should be a surprise to anyone. You know, Indy's on an upswing and NASCAR's on a down. So obviously that Fox wants to give their viewers a chance to watch, you know, what might appeal to them more. And as far as the future goes, I can only keep my fingers crossed that the trend kind of continues and we see, you know, a lot more countries get coverage, because I know there are fans all over who want to see, and right now they don't have TV deals. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed for you guys.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Jess said first, that, you know, it's pretty good that, you know, New Zealand's deal, I think I read, was through 2021. So a multi-year international deal is good in today's international TV market. But also, you know, Fox choosing IndyCar over NASCAR is, you know, pretty cool to see, especially, you know, NASCAR, the Daytona 500 still drew quite a few fans. Although I just read, it just popped up on my phone probably about 10 minutes ago while we're recording here, that after all the overnight ratings were factored in, this was the lowest watched Daytona 500 of all time. So just a statement of things heading in the right direction for IndyCar and maybe NASCAR in a rut is definitely accurate when it comes to these international TV deals.
Maybe I'm just used to being like, you know, the redheaded stepchild where everything is, I'm just used to everything not going the right way. Because Jess said, you know, IndyCar's on the upswing, NASCAR's on the downswing. I'm still trying to get accustomed to that, and maybe try not to get ahead of myself, because it is amazing to see how much progress IndyCar has made. And yes, I think it is great that IndyCar was selected over NASCAR for Fox in Australia, and hopefully, fingers crossed, maybe the locals will be watching the Surfers Paradise race next year, hopefully. And I know I said I'd toss the mic real quick, but I do want to butt in with some quote-unquote breaking news. This article is from The Statesman, which is a Texas newspaper, I believe, saying that Governor Abbott, who's Texas's governor, has rejected the Circuit of America's proposal for reimbursement for the $20 million sanctioning fee for the Formula One race. Yikes. I'm trying to quick scan through the article. I'm trying to figure out if that means that Coda's just stuck with it or if Austin is stuck with it. But
it has, what I can tell you is, I don't know where, you know, who stuck with it, but it has something to do with some sort of international human trafficking law or something that they signed into effect there. I know that doesn't sound particularly well worded, but I was probably reading the same thing you did, Matt. I just clicked off of it a couple minutes ago.
They had, okay, so they had 30 days prior to the event to put in writing their plan for, I think it was actually human sex trafficking is what they said, to prevent that at a large event. And they did not get it turned in time. I did not see who was going to be having to pay for that. But let's hope that for the IndyCar event, they get their paperwork and up to date. That way they don't have to have this come out again. But yeah, obviously somebody's going to be slapped on the wrist for this one, because that is huge, huge for them. So hopefully it doesn't have any ill effects down the road.
So just to recap, everybody, Mike is the show's resident mascot expert, and he can tell you anything you need to know about Gritty.
That's right.
Who's the Philadelphia Flyers mascot. I'm the resident Green Bay Packer bashing expert. Never have a nice thing to say about the Green Bay Packers. And then there's Jess. She's like our legal expert, our medical expert last week. She's just got it down. Mike, we need to.
I legitimately read a lot. So,
Mike, we need to do something else. We're just getting shown up on a week to week basis here.
I have no comment on that one.
Next week,
I will say that I was actually kind of raising my hand while you guys were kind of going back and forth, even though you couldn't see me, because I'm like, ooh, I read this one. Ooh, me.
Well done, Jess. Thanks for bringing that up, Matt. I kind of forgot about that as soon as I clicked off the article. Our first round of Patreon shout-outs. Let's see, where should we start today? Let's start with photographer Stephen King, Michael Goodyear, Matt Gruenholds, and Jason Camp. Thank you guys. Camps, I'm sorry, I got his name wrong. That was not a good shout-out. Thank you guys very much for your continued support. And I know I'll see a couple of you at racetracks in the next couple months at least.
Perfect. So moving on. So when we recorded this, our last episode, it was on the first day of the Circuit of the Americas testing. So we're going to do a very brief kind of rundown of the top 10 from the second day as far as the second session, because Colton Herta did finish all of the three first sessions at P1, but unfortunately just got pipped at the end by Alexander Rossi in the fourth and final session. So it was Rossi followed by Colton Herta, who had an amazing couple of days there at Circuit of the Americas. Hunter Ray, Rosenquist, Rahal Dixon, Pagano, Hinch, Ferrucci, and Newgarden. A couple other notables. Power was 11th. Erickson was 13th. Marco was 15th. Bourdais was 20th. And Castroneves was 22nd, but again, he's probably just doing a testing regimen, so not too big. Piggott, 24th out of 25. I'm not sure if they had an issue there, but Jess, any final thoughts after the whole COTA weekend is done? With Herta doing so well, a lot of the big names kind of up front, familiar, anything stand out to you?
I'm really excited for the season, honestly. Like, just the whole thing got me fired up and ready to go. There was some surprises. Obviously, Herta was one of them, and I think Power was one of them, in not necessarily the correct way. But obviously, they were learning a new track. Lots of time to get everything sorted before they get there for the actual race. But man, I'm excited.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise to me was in the top 10, we had three rookies. Now, I know Rosenquist has quite a bit of overall experience, but Colton Herta being incredibly impressive all four sessions, and Marcus Ericsson being impressive for the most part, although in test session four at least he was 13th, and that's all I have up on my computer right now. But the rookies were highly impressive overall, and I guess the one thing that caught me slightly off guard in terms of rookie is Kyle Kaiser, because he only finished in, or he competed in four races last year, is still considered a rookie this year. Just a minor note, I don't think he's a contender for Rookie of the Year, because I don't think he'll be doing a full season, but the R next to his name caught me off guard when I was in Austin last week.
I think you need at least five races to be considered no longer a rookie, so that makes a little bit of sense. Just and Actually, something I've actually never ranted about is when IndyCar and Champ Car merged in 2008, the IndyCar series had the audacity to brand every driver that came over from Champ Car as a rookie. So that included, like, Justin Wilson was a rookie. It's like, are you serious? Like, come on.
I never really thought about that one.
But, well, and it's weird because when the chunk of the IRL drivers in 2002 and 2003, a chunk of the kart drivers came to IRL in 2002, 2003, they weren't branded as rookies. Like when Scott Dixon won his championship in 03 in the IRL in his first year, he wasn't a rookie. I never understood that. Maybe we should save that for like a Patreon episode and talk about why that was a stupid idea. Anyways, yes, but that's the reason that Kaiser. One kind of big announcement that came out this week was this new safety feature that IndyCars will have at the open test in April at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the Oval. At the Indianapolis 500 itself, and then every race thereafter. It's this new little device. I don't know if you want to call it a device, but it's this new little feature on the front cockpit of the car. I didn't get a measurement as to how tall it is, but basically it looks like a little rhino horn is kind of what I'm going to go with. It looks like a little horn on the car meant to deflect large objects, you know, like tires and anything like that in the event of a crash to kind of help better protect drivers. IndyCar has still been working on this aero screen, but there's still a couple of faults with it. So unfortunately, it wasn't ready in time for 2019. And then according to Jay Fry, who we love, he said that the halo that you see in Formula One and other FIA series could not be fitted to the current IndyCar chassis that we have. So it was not an option. Plus banked ovals would make it pretty tough for drivers to see. So we'll start with Mike on this one. Any thoughts about this new device that they're going to be fitting to the cars?
Yes. First off, your question on measurements, it's 3 inches tall by, I think, 3/4 of an inch wide. So, you know, pretty minimal in terms of space it takes up. But listen, there are a ton of social media warriors out there over the last 24 hours spouting their opinions without really doing any research or thought or looking at too much. So, and I won't call anybody out, but it's a step in the right direction. As IndyCar said, this is not the end goal. There will be more. I don't think any of us can say what this quote unquote rhino horn will do in terms of safety, but it's better than A, doing nothing, and B, rushing to put on something terrible or ugly or ineffective. I talked to Pato O'Ward yesterday myself just to kind of get his thought on it. And he said, pretty cool, so much better than anything else. And then a bunch of other drivers yesterday, you know, came out in support of it. So I think it's, you know, it's a step in the right direction. And I applaud IndyCar for taking a small approach in the safety world.
Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I'm glad that they're doing something. I'm glad they're not rushing into something crazy that, you know, may or may not really help in the long run. I think that, you know, in these particular types of accidents, it definitely could deflect materials from coming at the driver. So I think it's a great thing. And like everybody has kind of said on social media, you know, everybody's proud of the series for doing what they're doing and working on it so hard to make it right, not only for the drivers, but also for the fans who are watching, to make everything, you know, like a seamless transition into it. So I, as Matt is calling it, the rhino horn, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I appreciate that IndyCar is doing something because it is an area of concern for me. I'm primarily concerned with like tires. Tires would be a big one, or, you know, just the larger piece of objects. Unfortunately, like the smaller objects, like a spring or anything like that, you know, there's still danger in place for the driver, or at certain angles, you know, if object comes from above instead of head on, that's still a concern. But in the meantime, while they continue to research and everything, I do appreciate the fact that they do something. And so Mike is definitely right. You know, there was a lot of warriors out on social media, and it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you don't do anything, people are going to complain. And then when they finally do something, people complain. So I guess what can you really do at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Did you have something else to add?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to our buddy Fo Willpower, who chronicled all of the things the IndyCar fans have been complaining about in an off season where things have really been going in the right direction. And it'll take me a long time to pull up his tweet because it was sometime last night, but shout out to Faux Will for stating the obvious that things aren't really that bad, guys. There's a lot of good going on, and once you take time to think about all of the off-season changes, they're not, everything is a step in the right direction.
Another feature to a car that was added right before the Circuit of the Americas test was this new onboard camera that's primarily used for teams and engineers and whatnot. If you're an observant fan at home and you've ever watched IndyCar practice sessions, sometimes when they go to an onboard camera for a driver, there's just weird giant black object in front of the camera that's blocking you from seeing the driver's helmet, steering wheel, just their general cockpit area. Those are actually consumer-based camera GoPro things that teams would stick on the car that would help them kind of get their own readouts and whatnot from watching a driver do an onboard lap in practice. But now there's no more need for that. So every team has this device on the car that's right below the air box of the IndyCar. And so we saw a glimpse of it. I think Racer or IndyCar themselves posted a video of Scott Dixon rolling around Circuit of the Americas with it. It's great for engineers, again, to kind of get feedback. It monitors G-forces and lateral Gs and things like that. Just gives them a different vantage point. Weird, I didn't see any drivers commenting about it on Twitter, so I'm not sure if it's widely accepted yet, because I guess that's the new parameter for seeing if things added to cars are the best way to see. You know, if drivers aren't commenting about it on Twitter, I'm not sure if that means that they like it yet. So I guess we'll have to wait and see if anybody tweets about it first. And then one other thing to touch on, if we just get general comments from you guys, was that digging through the IndyCar.com photos from Circuit of the Americas on the second session, we saw Takuma Sato and Marco Andretti at the least testing what looked like a new LED panel that was in for the IndyCars for the first couple of races, but was then removed after it was found to have some faults at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway test. So fingers crossed, hopefully they're making progress on replacing that, because it is a really cool feature. Jess, I don't know if you have thoughts on any of those.
Let's see. You covered quite a few. So I'm going to start with camera. I think that's awesome. I think, you know, anything that can be used to give the teams in the series more data when they're doing runs, during accidents, anything like that, I am all for it, because it is just going to, we go back to the safety thing, it's just going to help them with any kind of safety developments. And then as far as the LED panels, man, if they can get those things to work, they are amazing. I really, really hope to see them back. It really is helpful as a fan, you know, to know what exactly is going on. So I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed, but I'm not holding my breath at this point.
Yeah, one other thing to add. I believe Ed Jones also had an LED panel, at least with the second day of testing. I did notice that. I don't remember if I took a picture, but if I scroll through my phone and I have a picture, I will put it on social media, but I really do hope the LED panels come back. They're pretty cool, at least for fans to kind of figure out where their drivers are, favorite drivers are in positions, not always readily apparent on a TV screen or, you know, at a racetrack. And in terms of the new onboard cameras, I mean, it's definitely a nicer and better looking solution than those goofy looking cameras that you, especially the ones you saw in the Penske cars last year, at least. Those were kind of, they looked like, I don't even know how you describe what they looked like. They were hideous.
You're about to get in trouble there.
Yeah. I had to rein in my words there real quick. So yeah, I think, you know, both, I hope the LED panels come back. We haven't heard anything about it, so I really don't know what to think of that.
It's interesting. You just mentioned Ed Jones, right?
Yes.
He crashed at the Indianapolis 500 last year. Who else crashed at the Indianapolis 500 last year?
I know who didn't. Aaron Rodgers.
Oh. Well, who did, though?
Oh, that would be Jess's favorite driver, Danica Patrick.
Okay, so I don't have Stump the Host this week, and I'm not trying to steal Mike's thunder, because that topic's coming up here very shortly. But I do have to maybe throw in a Danica fact, because it's been a while. So as far as my knowledge goes, Danica, did you guys know that Danica has only crashed at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in an IndyCar 3 times?
Wow.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I am going to have to write that one down and put it on my whiteboard.
And one of them just happened to be in her last race there. Anyways, my trivia question, because it's not a Stump the Host again, because I'm not trying to steal Mike's thunder, but one of those crashes occurred in the pits. Who was that incident with? And we'll go to our resident Danica expert, Jess, first for again.
Marco.
No. Mike?
Dario Franchitti.
No.
Buddy Jeff. Rice.
No. Mike.
Boy. Ryan Hunter Ray.
No. Jess.
Elio Castroneves.
You are so close, but no, Mike.
Willpower.
No, you're getting, your guys are so warm. Jess.
Jill DePerrin.
No,
Mike. I'm going to bow out on this one.
Jess, anymore?
I mean, Mike, was I warmer or colder?
you were colder because she actually never raced any race with Jill DePerrin.
No. Simon Pagenaud?
No. Who else was she teammates with, or who else was Elio and Power teammates with at some point? Oh God.
I don't know. Joseph Newgarden.
We were looking for Ryan Briscoe. Remember that? Because she stormed down the pits all angry and I'm gonna.
Oh yeah, that's when her dad got. Didn't her dad get ejected from the pits?
No, that was Watkins.
I think he did at Indy one year too.
Star stand, wasn't he?
I don't remember. I think at one year. No, you're right. Not at Indy. No, never mind.
Anyways, I don't know, but we'll toss it over to Mike for Patreon, and then the real Stump the Host question.
Yes, that was a junior Stump the Host question. Thank you, Mr. Colin Taylor, David Lighting. I'm sorry Matt made fun of the Packers.
I didn't make fun of them. I just said I was the resident making fun of X.
Yes. George Butts, thank you. See you in a couple weeks. And Mike Silver, I think that is it. I'm sorry if I missed anybody. But thank you guys again for all your support. As you say, Colin Taylor, just in case I didn't. Colin, you get a second shout out. Now for my Stump the Host. St. Pete is just a little over 2 weeks away here. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 current IndyCar drivers that have won at St. Pete. Can you name them? Jess, you start.
Okay, let's see. Sorry, I'm trying to go like back a ways. That way I don't start with the ones that'll be easier later.
Could I play the Jeopardy music?
Hinchcliffe?
Yes.
Bourdais?
Yes.
Crap. I'm struggling tonight, guys. Ryan Hunter Ray?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Our.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm here. I'm just thinking. My brain is not wanting to do this. No, I don't know.
Matt?
Ray Hall.
Yep, we have two left.
Because I know Dixon hasn't.
Oh, I'm sorry, we have one left.
Oh, so it's five?
Yes, sorry. Math is hard.
Is it full-time driver or just anybody who's going to be in the field next year?
Anybody who's going to be in the field.
So Elio.
Yep, there you go.
Sweet.
All right, Matt dominated that one. And we will go back to this week in IndyCar news.
Well, actually, before I do that, I actually want to play a little game with you guys. And that game, cool. These guys don't know about it, so this is actually a surprise. You know, Mike's not the only one that just breaks news on this one. But this is from our Patreon subscriber, David Lighting, who submitted a question. And it's kind of more of a gamey type question. So if I were to say, I'm trying to think of an analogy. Mike, if you had to compare the Chicago Cubs to an IndyCar driver, who would you say they were and why?
Okay.
That's kind of a little example of what we're doing.
Okay, I see where you're getting at. That's a great question. Thank you, David Lighting.
Because one that would stand out to me maybe is like a Marco Andretti, because they're like a lovable loser per se. And lovable is a loose term because there are people who do like Marco, even though us three know. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Does it have to be a current driver?
No. I mean, because we could do like Raul Boisel, who started almost 200 races and never won.
I was going to say Vitor Mira.
Yeah.
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Yeah.
Anyways, so it's kind of like that. So just put on your thinking caps for that. So we're going to take an NFL football team, and I want you guys to draw a parallel to which IndyCar team they are like. All right.
I have a Cubs answer for you, Oriel Servia.
Yeah. Oh, good, because he's won like what, once?
A zero.
No, he's won once.
Oh, I'm sorry, once. Once in car. Yeah, my bad.
Montreal 05 or something.
Yes.
And if you ask him, New Hampshire 2011, but he didn't get that one. But anyway, so I'm going to give you guys an NFL football team, and I want you to compare that to an IndyCar team. We'll say try to go a current IndyCar team, but if you can't think of one, you can go with the past team. So we'll start off with the New England Patriots. Jess, which IndyCar team is like the New England Patriots?
Come on.
This one is kind of like a duh moment, but Penske with his ridiculous amount of 500.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, well, there's no other. You could say Ganassi, but Penske is by far the easiest answer in this one.
How about the Oakland Raiders, who were once a amazing franchise and now are kind of dumpy?
Oh boy. Once amazing, now not good. That's a tough one, because most of the not good teams just don't exist anymore.
That's true. Is there one that stands out?
I got one. Ooh,
go.
Boy.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, wow. Yeah, good point.
They had some good IRL days, and then like they were bad in like kart. And I guess I don't know about like anything before the 80s, but they were bad in kart. Then they switched over to the IRL when the IRL started and were good. And then once all the big teams showed up, they were bad again. So that's actually a pretty good one, Jess. How about, so there's only one right answer in my book for this one, but how about our favorite team, the Green Bay Packers?
Green Bay Packers. I'm going to say Ganassi. Sometimes they have really good years. Other years, they're just not really that impressive.
See, you and I had the same thought. So I said Ganassi too, but mine was for kind of a different reason, because obviously there are people out there who like Chip Ganassi Racing, but for the most part, everybody hates them.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
There are people out there who do not like Chip Ganassi for sure. The last one, we'll go with Jess on this one. We'll go with one more here. The Cleveland Browns.
Oh, man. Oh.
How about we go with the past team on this one?
Okay.
Because, like, I don't know if Coin is necessarily a Cleveland Browns team.
I wouldn't say that's the thing. I mean, honestly, at this point, really, the only one probably you could use would be Boy, I guess. But
Yunkos. No, sorry, Yunkos.
Rude.
Not that I had that queued up as soon as he asked the question.
Oh, wait. How about like Dreyer Reingold?
That's neat.
I mean, they're still technically current and they kind of don't have the best track record.
Yeah, that's fair.
How about like a KV Racing, where it seems like, you know, they're good for a good performance every now and then, but at the most, they're usually a train wreck.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that one either.
Okay.
Yeah, well, there are several that could fit that one.
If you feel like you have a better one, tweet it to us, and I'm sure we will probably agree with you, because there's a lot of different directions you could take those. And thank you, David, for submitting that question. We always really appreciate those, and always got some fun stuff queued up for us. Back to the news. So no more football, no more Danica. We're good to go. An interesting thing came out today with the Paddle Award. There was a bit in Miller's mailbag about what went down with the whole Michael Andretti offered Pato an 8-race deal after the whole Harding thing went south and Pato declined. And a bunch of people were going, what in the heck are you doing, you moron? You know, Michael Andretti offers you an 8-race deal, you take it. Well, kind of using logic, Pato declined mainly because Mike Harding was still going to be involved with that situation. And if you recently just got burned by Mike Harding, why would you still want to be with him? Does that logic hold up with you two as well, Mike?
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame Pato at all. Him and I talked about it a little bit last week, and you know, he said if it was just straight Andretti, he would have taken the deal. But you know, with the Harding tie in, however it tied in. He didn't really want to be a part of that, and I don't know how anybody can blame him.
Agreed. I don't know in what capacity Harding would have been involved, but I would say it would be a hard pill to swallow for him to be involved at all. There's obviously going to be a bad taste in Pato's mouth for a little bit. So it could be a thing where, you know, after Pato blows some steam off in a year or so, then maybe that deal wouldn't have been bad. But right off the bat, that is just not a good idea.
Jess, are you going to spontaneously combust for agreeing with Mike so much tonight?
I'm confused. Not,
because this is like, I kind of want to throw up every time I have to open my mouth.
Mike, I don't mind agreeing with you that much. It's okay for me, but yeah. I can see how that'd be an issue with Jess.
I'm very confused she's agreeing so much.
I'm going to cry myself to sleep tonight.
There we go. We got that settled. Santi Arutia, Mike's favorite driver, did tweet that there was going to be some sort of announcement involving going to Europe or something. I think I got that right because this is from my translating app, so I'm not sure how accurate that translation was. But I don't honestly even know if we ever got to that. He said tomorrow, as in like 3 days ago, and I don't know if he ever did. I'll check real quick.
For once, he did actually.
He did.
He did. Yes, he is. He will be piloting an Audi RS3 LMS for renowned Belgian outfit Team WRT, which won 3 races in the European Touring Car Series in 2018. So best of luck to him. I'm glad he is, you know, able to, you know, continue racing. And I think we can just leave that one at that.
Well, earlier I said you were like the resident gritty expert. And in fact, okay, You're the resident cheating expert. So you definitely had that one queued up, made up for my
I had it ready to go before we even started recording.
Definitely
tonight.
Made up for my lack of preparedness there. So good job on that one. We'll toss it over to Mike.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank our sponsor again for coming back, Apex Pro, the ultimate driver modification for racing, autocross, and high-performance driving events. Powerful, cost-effective data acquisition hardware that pairs with a free app on your iPhone. The hardware itself is $450 and delivers powerful data right to your phone with no wiring or complex installation. If you go to your app store, just search Apex Pro or go to www.apextrackcoach.com. And if you enter the code PitLaneParlay in checkout, you get the fancy smartphone mount for 50% off. I may have misquoted that last week, and thank you to Boss Man Andrew Rains over there for correcting me on that one. And the links will again be in our show notes on wherever you listen to the podcast.
Yeah, appreciate the support there, guys. When we talked about Indy Lights also testing at the Circuit of Americas, we had mentioned that Oliver Askew was doing very well, but it was kind of in the air about what the test actually meant and if he was going to be in Indy Lights in some capacity or at all. Turns out he will be. So he signed on for the 2019 season with Andretti Autosport, which is excellent news. And if I'm being honest, I think we just got our new front runner for the championship based off what we've seen from him in his kind of junior grades. And so we are going to be doing a preview of IndyCar and Indy Lights here very soon. So I guess we can kind of expand on that a little bit in the future. But for now, we can just confirm that he'll be a full season next year. Unfortunately, Logan Sargeant, who also tested at that test in Indy Lights with Carlin, is actually going over to race with Carlin in Europe, I believe in F3.
Yes.
Is what Mike told me. So kind of a bummer. I got all excited that he was going to be here and he's gone. Mike Tirico, for those of you at home who have watched the Olympics in recent years, anything NBC related, Monday Night Football several years ago, he will be the official host of the Indianapolis 500 on NBC. Big name, really likable guy, fantastic announcer, fantastic commentator, all around good dude. I don't know if you guys have any personal memories and or things you like about Mike Tirico. Jess, I don't know. Do you have anything you'd like to share about Mike Tirico?
I do watch the Olympics, and I have always thought he did a really good job. So I'm really excited to see what he can bring to 500. And it sounds like he's really excited to come. So that makes it even more exciting, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't really watch the Olympics when he it was hosting, but you're watching when he was doing Monday Night Football. The man is just always prepared. And some people are saying, well, what does he know about IndyCar? I'm sure over the next couple months, I think he's been a fan to begin with, but whatever he doesn't know, I am sure he will do the work and be at other races and learn as much as possible. And he's a great host type announcer. So another host, Mike. So I'm excited by it. I'm definitely going to record it so I can watch it when I get back from the race and see how he sounded.
Would you guys stop being so optimistic? I only saw two IndyCar drivers tweet about it. That means it's probably not a good thing.
You know, you win some and you lose some.
Everything is bad. We're actually going to shift gears here. So that's kind of the end of the news portion of the evening. But there was one thing that we all kind of, I wouldn't say shrugged at, we all kind of unanimously thought about it deeply. And what we're talking about here is that when RC Enerson showed it up to the Laguna Seca test, he was just in the royal blue Carlin car, which is kind of their main color for a lot of their sports series. But when he showed up to the Circuit of America's test, he actually had a new sponsor called Kraft 1861. From what I gathered from their website, they sell products and whatnot infused with THC, which you find in marijuana. I got a kind of a rundown from a friend at work who knows more about it than I do, but basically lotions and things like that. So it's not necessarily like marijuana itself. It's just products infused with stuff that you would find in marijuana. And it's not necessarily for recreational use like normal marijuana. Am I getting that right? Or am I, that sound all
no,
right?
Sir. No, sir.
Oh, gosh.
Go ahead,
all
Jess.
Right. All right, Jess, here you
go. It's okay. No, you're fine. You're totally fine because I know there's a lot of confusion around this. I don't particularly know much about this actual company, but I did a lot of research on the product. It's CBD, not THC. And CBD oils has all the like calming benefits and pain relief benefits of marijuana. However, it doesn't have the THC in it, which gives you the high part.
I think that's what I meant.
So
it's like doing marijuana without getting high is what I was told.
Yes, it's basically it. So it is, you can buy it over the counter in a lot of stores. Now, it's not regulated currently, so there is some debate about that because the whatever FDA or whoever would be regulating that, I'm not sure, but it's not regulated yet, so there is some debate over that. I will be perfectly honest, I am a fan of CBD. My dog takes it every day, and my cats take it also, and so do I. So I don't see a problem with it, but obviously I know a lot of people might.
Yeah, and so thanks for kind of stepping in there because I was doing a very poor job of explaining. I basically was trying to say what Jess said. I just kind of failed pretty bad.
You just said it backwards. You're cool.
Yeah, I kind of had it the wrong way around, but that's okay. So thanks for stepping in there. But yeah, so, and Jess kind of answered the question we were going to ask, but the question I'll pose to Mike too is, do you have a problem with it?
No. So in doing my own research, CBD is fully legal in many states that IndyCar races in and is legal with for a medicinal use in Indiana. So which caught me off guard because I know Indiana is usually a pretty conservative state, which I think Jess mentioned when we were talking about gambling last week or the week before. So I don't have a problem with it. It's, you know, it depends on how they, you know, promote the product. I guess that would be interesting. And I'm sure IndyCar is either talking to them or watching it very closely. but we may not even need to worry about it because as of now, that sponsor hasn't signed for anything past testing. So curious to see how they proceed. But like Jess, I don't really have a problem with it, but I wouldn't be surprised if IndyCar is watching this one very closely.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily say I have a problem with it either. However, what, and I'm not trying to get political here, but what I appreciate is when people out there do their kind of their own research and, you know, rather than just taking our word for it or someone who's anti this sponsor's word for it, you know, just kind of formulate your opinions, do some research, see what you think, and then kind of come to your own conclusion as if it's good or bad. I agree with what Mike and Jess said. However, if you're kind of on the other side here, we'd love to hear your opinion on that as well. Or if you just kind of want to poke around, do some research, and let us know what you think after doing some research on it, all for that too. It is kind of an interesting debate because we are seeing, you know, factually speaking, we are seeing a lot of states trend towards the legalization of marijuana, you know, that's used for medicinal reasons or smoking. It's kind of something that's interesting to see, you know, what transpires and if, you know, either IndyCar allows it, NBC's okay with it, if NBC's not okay with it, if IndyCar's not okay with it. So it's something that we're going to definitely keep our eyes on. Mike, anything to add?
Yeah, just another quick research note here. If we're going based off of where CBD is legal and illegal, it's only completely illegal in Idaho, Kansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota, which IndyCar will not be in those states at any point in 2019. So if we're looking at that as a basis for, you know, quote unquote approval of the sponsorship from an IndyCar perspective, there shouldn't be any, you know, state issues in terms of, you know, allowing them to promote on a race car at a race this year. Just wanted to add that in there.
Jess, anything to add?
No.
Cool. So yeah, like I said, let us know on Twitter. We're always open to discussion. Normally don't do those type of things, but this is something that we wanted to talk about just because there could be something that pops up here in the near future where somebody might not say it's okay, like an NBC or something like that, or a sponsor out there or whoever, but we'll keep our eyes on it and let you guys know. Mike, any sponsor shout outs to you?
The only thing I have to bring up this week is I got the new schedule from IndyPhilly.com. IndyPhilly.com. Every race weekend, you will be able to hear us on Sundays at 10 a.m. That starts St. Pete weekend and will go until the end of the season, as well as Wednesdays from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern time. Actually, if you happen to be on IndyPhilly.com as we're recording, you're probably hearing last week's episode right now. So with that, we can jump into the pitfalls. Matt, you want to start?
Oh, sure. So I got the sponsor side of it this week. So the first one is I did watch the Daytona 500, I'll admit, and there was a commercial in the Daytona 500 for Busch Light, who is the sponsor for Kevin Harvick. And they're doing this amazing promotion right now where they're turning one of his race-winning cars into a collectible set of 40 beer cans to give to. Because nothing says technology and innovation and a great racing series like being able to turn a car into a beer can. That's kind of where I was just sitting with that. That was my first thought. And I was going, what in the hell are you guys doing? So if you happen to be one of the 40 fans out there, congrats. You got a great piece of NASCAR technology. If you're a normal person like me, you can also just go get a 12-pack at a liquor store and get a great piece of NASCAR technology too, because it's basically made out of the same material. My part two was actually something that a lot of people on Twitter took care of for me because a lot of people were bashing them, including our very own very good friend, Faux Willpower, who, and this is in regards to Rich Energy, energy drink company that is now the sponsor for Haas F1 team. After the first day of testing, just the first day, their Twitter account tweeted a superb effort today in testing by Haas F1 team and the tremendously talented Romain Grosjean. Passed out after that part, the tremendously talented Romain Grosjean, only when Marcus Ericsson's not hitting him. The second part of the tweet, our first day in F1, we are faster than Red Bull Racing. Oh, God. It's the first day of testing. Like, are you serious? Red Bull is going to be like 247 points ahead of these guys once we get to the season finale. And it's probably not going to be that bad, but I hope Red Bull tweets to this at Twitter account, who is run by someone who probably just graduated college and this was the first tweet they ever sent. I hope Red Bull tweets at them every single race that they beat them in and just say, yeah, weird how that worked. Ooh, I don't know if you guys have thoughts on those.
Yeah, that was the most cringeworthy tweet of the weekend, at least that I can remember. I hope at the end of the season, Red Bull just kind of does, you know, there's a Twitter account like Bad Sports Takes, and I hope they pick up on this one. And I hope Red Bull is hanging this up around their office as motivation. I still can't figure out where you buy a rich energy drink, but I mean, it's testing. Like we've said with IndyCar testing a million times in our, you know, 60 something episodes here, testing doesn't really mean all that much because you don't know what guys are doing, how much fuel they have in the car, what program they're running, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So to get that boastful after the first day of testing really made my weekend, or my Tuesday, really got a good laugh out of it.
I'm trying not to get ahead of myself because Mercedes did not have a good 3 days. And I did tweet something about it, and a couple of people probably said, you know, it's just testing, and that's fair. But inner me is a little hopeful that Mercedes just has a bad year. That's just, I'm really sick of Lewis Hamilton doing well. Mike commented a couple episodes ago, if Mercedes as a whole has a bad year, Valtteri Bottas is gone, even if it's not his fault. They'll probably make way for Ocon, but anyways, I don't know who wants to go next with their pitfall.
Go ahead, Jess.
I want to also just interject this because it's kind of funny on the whole rich energy thing. First of all, you said you didn't know where to get it. It is British and apparently only British. Oh. So there's that. Then I just wanted to point out that their slogan also, I guess, kind of knocks on Red Bull because their slogan is "Forget the wings, rich energy gives you horns." Okay, so moving on, I'll go to mine. That was terrible. That was really bad.
That's anyways, the worst company slogan I've ever heard.
No, I can think of worse, but that one's pretty terrible too.
I'll digress.
Yeah. So I am going to pitfall Team Williams. So I usually stay away from the F1 stuff. Don't watch a lot of it anymore. It's just too much in general. I love it. Don't get me wrong, but the atmosphere and everything, in my opinion, is just not what it used to be. But I couldn't help but notice that they missed the first 2.5 days of the 3-day test. Whoopsies.
Oh, it started?
Yeah. Oh, shoot. We knew we were supposed to be doing something this week. So I read an article where Claire Williams discusses basically, she doesn't go into any details, but she discusses how they are embarrassed by what happened. It appears that the production of some of the parts for the car wasn't on time. She, again, didn't elaborate on what she meant by that. I did enjoy the, it was apparent quite late, actually, that they weren't going to make it. Oh, really? Because if your parts were running behind, I would think you would know about that with a little bit of notice. But maybe they're making these things on the fly. I don't know. They got somebody whittling pieces out of wood on the airplane on the ride over. I don't know. But I'm blown away that a team of their funding and their caliber could have something this bad go wrong. I just have to kind of shake my head.
I can't stop laughing.
Just so yeah. I don't. The only thing I'm going to add there, speaking of F1, is the new F1 front wing end plates that look like boxes are really hideous. That's about all I have to add to the F1 discussion on this one. I think Jess hit the nail on the head there with how embarrassed
with the word Williams. Whoopsie.
Yeah. Matt, do you have any thoughts on that one before I continue?
No, that was flawless, Jeff.
Yeah. Switching gears here, back to the NASCAR world. I'm sure there are plenty of things we could pitfall from the NASCAR world if we wanted to. I'm just going to focus on Goodyear and Goodyear tires. How many tire failures did we see throughout the Daytona 500? Probably more than I can remember off the top of my head. It's just kind of embarrassing that, you know, it's the one of the biggest talking points of the race is how many tires are failing or getting cut down, and makes me very thankful for Firestone. And I'm going to add on one thing to my NASCAR pitfall here is the announcer saying that these are the best drivers in the world, and then they crash going in a straight line 87 times in the last 20 laps. I made a joke to my dad as we were watching the race that it would, the last 20 laps or 30 laps would take 57 minutes, and it took an extra 30 something minutes on top of that. And it almost got painful to just sit there and watch them wreck lap after lap after lap every time they restarted. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Goodyear or the world's best drivers.
Yeah, two thoughts from me. First of all, about the whole commentator saying the best drivers in the world. Well, and I think Robin Miller touched on his Miller mailbag today, but it always amazes me when we go to a Daytona or Talladega and there is a 15 car plus crash, and the commentators go, "Wow, that's amazing. That's so surprising." It's like, how is this surprising? It happens every time you go to the freaking track at Daytona. There's always a crash that has at least 10 cars in it once a race.
Yep.
It's just one driver does something wrong and the whole field's collected. Because there was the 18 or something car crash that really obliterated a lot of the field. And I had a second thought. I got so frustrated with thinking about Darrell Waltrip getting surprised and things like that. That, what did you say again? So you talked about
Goodyear.
Goodyear. Oh, yeah. Goodyear destroyed the hideous livery on Corey LaJoie's car. So they actually did some good prior to them screwing up.
That stupid face. But I digress. Jess, would you like to add any thoughts to this?
I think that I saw where the stupid face livery is coming back.
Yes, it is.
This weekend or next, whenever the next race is. I don't know.
I think it's this
but
weekend.
So we can only hope that Goodyear has, you know, the same issues, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we can tell why it was the lowest watched one ever, because the driving just isn't that good. Even Robin Miller is coming out and kind of bashing NASCAR now, which you haven't seen in the mailbag too much, but I think that is it for the week. Next week, we'll be back with our season preview, most likely. And we are now within, by the time you're listening to this, exactly 2 weeks to go until the season finally starts, and we're in Florida. So with that, Jess, feel free to sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios, web design courtesy of A30.com.